What's up, y'all? We are back with more of the DNVR Rams podcast. I'm Justin Michael. If you missed part one, go back and check that out. I dove into some takeaways from the entire season as a whole, why I feel this season is a success, even if, you know, they didn't quite reach the expectations that we were hoping for. I kind of gave some thoughts on what went wrong against Texas, why it was a winnable game, how CSU defended, just unfortunately did not do enough offensively. On this one, we're going to kind of get into what potentially comes next. It's going to be a really important offseason for CSU. It's a really interesting offseason for CSU. I'm going to kind of give my thoughts on why I highly doubt that both Nico Medved and Ali Faroukhmanesh will be back this next season. I'll talk just kind of about the timing of it all. I'll talk about the, I guess, schools we should be most worried about stealing a guy like Nico, what CSU should do if that actually happens. And then I'm going to talk about the Mountain West as a whole and why this was a successful run in the NCAA tournament. Not what we wanted. It could have been better. Don't get me wrong. But some of the people and the hyperbole I'm seeing, it's a little bit obnoxious. Real quick, I do want to shout out Breckenridge Brewery, the official craft beer of DNVR. Breck Brew has a beer for any occasion. There's no better way to watch a game than having an ice-cold Breck Brew in hand. They've been doing it for 30-plus years, and it all comes down to their love and passion for making good beer. Some of my favorites include the Avalanche Amber Ale, but you can't go wrong with Funslinger. You can't go wrong with the Mountain Beach Sour, especially if you're looking for a little taste of summer. Sounds like we're getting some snow in the forecast again. Boo. But if you have an ice-cold Breck Brew, it's like all your worries go away. Check out the Breck Beer Locator at breckbrew.com to find a brew near you. I also want to talk to you guys about the Circle K Inner Circle. It's a free membership. It's easy to sign up. All you got to do is enter your email and phone number. Once you do, you're going to be getting hooked up for the rest of your life. Your first five fill-ups, you're going to get 25 cents off per gallon. I mean, that alone is worth signing up. But you also get five free Polar Pops. And after that, every sixth item is going to be free on Polar Pops, roller grills, dispensed beverages, pizzas, really anything. Right now, you can get a free any size Polar Pop from Colorado Circle K's if you text DNVR to 31310. That's DNVR to the number 31310. Message and data rates may apply. Periodic recurring messages per month. Terms and conditions can be viewed at CircleK.com. Sign up and get more information at www.CircleK.com/innercircle. All right, one of the toughest parts of being a successful G5 mid-major, however you want to phrase it, is that the cost of success is usually that you get your coach poached. And unsurprisingly, both Nico Medved and Ali Faroukhmanesh are going to have some options this offseason. It's going to be really interesting. I don't fully know what to expect, being completely honest and transparent with you guys. My gut is that Medved will end up at West Virginia. We're going to talk about all that. I'm going to explain why. I just think the timing makes a lot of sense. Obviously, he's got a lot of family ties, given Erica, his wife, as well. But it's an interesting spot because you have an interim athletic director, which does that make a coach a little bit more hesitant to potentially commit his future to a program? Potentially. I will say, I think that having made the move from Joe Parker to John Weber greatly increases the chances of CSU hanging on to a guy like Nico Medved. I'm not trying to take shots at a guy or kick him while he's down, but the reality was that Joe just did not embrace NIL or really any of the aspects of modern athletics. And I think when you read between the lines of some of the things that Parsons has said since then, that's incredibly clear that she recognized that. And all the coaches knew that too. I mean, there was not a secret. I will say, kind of going back to the original point before I got sidetracked there, just in terms of the interim AD component, I also fully expect John Weber to be named the full-time AD, like maybe even before the spring game, based on everything that I've heard, based on the way that Parsons has spoken publicly. I just think it's really clear that these two see eye to eye, that they are very aligned with their vision for what CSU can be, the way that it should operate, all of that. And honestly, I'm excited about it. I don't know what the future is going to hold. I have no idea if he's going to work out long term or not. But I also believe that without making the move, CSU would have been confined to a ceiling of mediocrity and an acceptance of standards that are just not high enough under the previous regime. I love John Weber's passion. I love his business background and his understanding of what this NIL landscape is. I love that he's re-engaged the community in a way that we have not seen in a long time. And that goes along with Parsons as well. Both of them have done a great job. And for me, I know that they're going to do everything that they can to keep a great coach, which Nico Medved is a great coach at CSU. There are some jobs that are realistically really tough to compete with when you're CSU. There are some jobs that you just can't turn down, whether that be their tradition, their history, the resources, probably a combination of all of those things if it really is a dream scenario type gig. But I'll also say, though, that I do think this is a completely different situation than 6 years ago. CSU is a much better job than it was because of the efforts of this coaching staff over the last half decade plus, because of the position that we're in as an institution regarding the leadership. It's a much more desirable president situation and, you know, athletic administration situation. I think it helps that the Mountain West has gained a lot of respect these last couple of years. We've seen that you can compete at the highest level in this league, not just for a mid-major, but really, I mean, at any level, you can compete with the best of the best. San Diego State making a run to the Final Four really proved that in a major way, and they followed it up with another great season here. With the right vision and with the right execution, it's not impossible to think that a school like CSU could be San Diego State, could be a Gonzaga. I mean, why not? When you look at the resources available, location, all of that stuff, the same stuff we've been talking about is why CSU could be, you know, in a bigger conference. We don't need to go down these same conversations we've had a million times, but Fort Collins is a great town. Colorado's grown so much as a whole. It's a killer university, great spot to live. You've got a community that's invested. The students, especially since 2020, have been great in terms of turnout for all the sports. I mean, it is a sleeping giant. And especially in basketball, I think it's a little bit more realistic to potentially create something like that, to be a sustained, successful powerhouse mid-major program. Not saying, obviously, that you're going to become Gonzaga all of a sudden and go to 9 straight Sweet 16s. Very few teams in the country have been able to sustain what they have under Mark Few. But there's no reason to believe that CSU couldn't be a program where the expectation every year is to be an NCAA tournament team. And with each year, you're kind of hoping to build more and more and have even more success. You know, you get past the first round a couple times, then all of a sudden it's like, all right, let's make a Sweet 16. Let's make an Elite Eight. And you just build. And that's what they did at Gonzaga. It's what they did at San Diego State. Didn't happen overnight. Didn't happen in 2-3 years. We're talking 10 to 15 years of highs and lows and kind of building off of what you've achieved each year. But it is possible, especially if you're able to have that continuity at the top of your program and hang on to a coach. Now, San Diego State, a little bit different of a situation, given you had Steve Fisher retire after 2017, but then you promote his longtime assistant, his right-hand man, Brian Dutcher, and you're able to maintain the identity of your program. And maybe that's more important than hanging on to one individual specifically, is just kind of being able to keep what allowed that individual to be successful going, if that makes sense. And that's usually easier when you have a guy that was a part of it. And for me, that's why if Nico were to move on, it makes a lot of sense to promote Ali Farokhmanesh. First of all, he's one of the best recruiters in the country. He's been great in terms of the development of, you know, Isaiah Stevens and these point guards over the years. There's no doubt to me that he's going to be a successful coach. Now, there's always some inherent risk with promoting a guy that has no head coach experience. I understand that. It's the type of thing Joe Parker would have never done because he wouldn't have been willing to take that gamble. You know, it's how you end up with guys like Steve Adazio, though, is when you're not willing to promote up-and-comers or, you know, to take a chance on some guy. I have a hard time seeing both of these guys be back, given you've been here for 6 years. And when you look at the timing of the situation, it just makes a lot of sense for one of them to move on. If you're Ali, it becomes tougher to wait around for the CSU gig to open up if Nico locks down with another extension, especially given, you know, it might be kind of not a full-on rebuild these next couple of years, but you're obviously going to have to greatly retool the roster after losing a lot of these veteran players. If Nico were to stick around, it becomes more about the long-term build and less so about single season success next year or something like that. Basically, I guess what I'm saying is if Nico chooses to commit, I think you're probably kind of choosing to commit for the foreseeable future. Now, you never know, like jobs open up all the time, you know, certain things happen and all of a sudden your plans change completely. But if you're Ali, you know, you can't wait around forever because then you get locked into that. Just you're an assistant, you know, you're a recruiting coach. You're not cut out to be a head coach. At the same time, you don't want to bolt too early. You know, if you take the wrong head coach gig, it can really screw you. And I think he's benefited from working under Tim Miles, from working under Nico, both guys that had opportunities at schools but waited until they got the right gig. Ali has had opportunities in the past to take head coaching gigs, like at Nebraska, Omaha, turned that down. It wasn't a good gig. It made sense, but at some point, you know, you kind of have to be open to the possibility of moving up if that is what you aspire to do. And he certainly aspires for that. I think he has the potential to be a great head coach. I think he's earned it. I think it makes too much sense to promote him. Again, if Nico decides to leave, I'm not rooting for Nico to leave or anything like that. My perfect scenario would be I'm just wrong and both of them are back next year. I just have a really hard time seeing that actually be the case. I think both of these guys are qualified for the gig. And, you know, when that happens, you know, it just makes sense at some point for somebody to move on. If you're a guy like Nico Medved, you've stuck around for 6 years. Why does it make more sense to leave now than, you know, say 2 years ago? One, you know, Isaiah's gone. Like, I don't think he would have left, you know, Isaiah Stevens in the wind. He probably just would have brought him with him if he went to a bigger school. But just the timing of it, you know, now you're original recruiting class, they've all gone through. You no longer have Roddy or Stevens to lean on. You probably think to yourself at some point, is my stock going to ever be hotter than it is right now after what we've done these last couple of years, producing a first-round pick, you know, making the NCAA tournament in 2 out of 3 years, winning the first NCAA tournament game in over a decade. His stock is probably, you know, higher than it's going to be, you know, next year if you have a down year with a bunch of young guys or just kind of a rebuilding year. I mean, you never know. You can turn around so fast in college basketball. I just think, like, it's kind of now or never. Like, you either make the jump now or you lean in to being a Mark Few, to being a Leon Rice, a guy who's just going to be the face of the program, a staple of the community for, you know, years and years. That's got to be a really tough call as a coach, especially if you have the opportunity to land one of those lucrative jobs. I think if Michigan would have offered, it's no doubt he takes that gig. You just can't turn it down. Jordan Brand alone makes it a top 15 job in the country. But with the history that they have, the resources, his Midwest roots, it just would have made so much sense. A little surprised they went with Dusty May from FAU. I guess he has the shinier run. I mean, going to the Final Four, I think at times we put a little bit too much stock into some of that stuff, like fluky NCAA tournament runs and whether that actually makes somebody a really good coach or not. I'm not trying to bag on May or anything like that, but I personally think Medved is a better coach. I think he would have been a really good fit there, very John Beilein-esque. Now the focus obviously turns to West Virginia, who is probably the biggest threat. I think that Drake's Darian DeVries are also going to be in play along with the JMU coach. You know, JMU still in the tournament. If they get a couple of more wins, maybe that really boosts that guy's stock. And you know, it ultimately has them pick him. I just think, you know, the fact that you have the family ties with Erica's father-in-law being so deeply rooted within WVU athletics and being so deeply tied to some of their donors, that's a big advantage in the NIL area. And, you know, that's a program that's historically been really competitive, a great basketball program. I've seen a lot of people comparing it to the Tim Miles, Nebraska situation. That's not even close in terms of when you look at just NCAA tournament success and appearances alone, not on the same level. I think there's an argument that that job is only going to get harder in a Big 12 that's expanding and adding more talented leagues. It was already not one of the top five or six jobs in the league. There's an argument like, is it even a top eight or nine job in this new expanded Big 12 when you add Arizona and Kansas and all of that? I mean, you lose Texas, I suppose, but Texas Tech and Houston are juggernauts these last couple of years. It's definitely a quote-unquote step up, though. Like, you got to take the green and gold glasses off if you're one of those people saying it. That's not even a better gig. It is, just from the resources available alone. Now, it's not necessarily perfect, and then that's, you know, it's not always everything. You know, the grass isn't always greener, even if the paycheck is. But it's not like it's a terrible program in a great league or something like that. Vanderbilt, I would put more in that equation. Apparently, they were in the mix on Dusty May as well, which, again, you know, do you, any of those jobs, it feels like that Darian DeVries, Dusty May, Nico Medved, they're all kind of up for the same gigs. You know, you would throw Louisville into that conversation as well. Could Medved be a guy for them now that they didn't land Dusty May? Based on all the reports, it sounded like they thought he was going to be their guy. I have a harder time seeing him land at Louisville just because Medved's a clean coach. You know, I don't think he wants to inherit all of the mess or the scandal or just the dumpster fire that has become Louisville over the last 10 to 15 years. And Vandy, even with great resources, at the end of the day, like, while he won't be expected to cheat or anything like that, to like do things that would go against his morals, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like a gig you can have sustained success. I'm hoping that no matter what the situation ends up being, whether he stays and signs an extension or he goes, we kind of find out all of this within the next couple of days. And that's really what I expect. I think we'll probably know by Wednesday or so whether Nico is staying or going. And then, you know, you hope to know not too long after that whether Ali is the guy. I think Ali has earned it if Nico decides to leave. I think he's a great recruiter. I think he's a rising star in the industry. I think he has the best chance to retain talent. For instance, if Nico leaves, I don't think he would just take everybody if Ali got promoted. You're not just going to screw your right-hand man like that. But if they were to hire some rando, does a Nate Clifford decide to then go to a West Virginia or wherever it may be with Nico Medved? I think it probably opens up the possibility of that. I don't think he would leave if Ali gets the gig. That's just my gut. I can't speak for him, obviously. But I just personally think that if Nico were to move on, the best chance for CSU to continue building off of what you've kind of been working towards here these last 6 years is by, you know, keeping the guy that's been a big part of that and you know, giving him a shot at the wheel. Going to be a couple of really interesting days, though, man. It's certainly going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I'm going to dive more into this, I think, tomorrow or the day after, because I want to get more in-depth. I didn't quite expect to ramble like this for so long. Some areas I'd like to see CSU target in the offseason, though, just kind of throwing out a teaser. I mean, three-point shooting seems pretty obvious. The inability to knock down open jump shots plagued the Rams throughout the conference slate. That, along with turnovers, their ultimate undoing against Texas. They need more guys that can create their own shot and knock it down. It was basically Isaiah. Neek was able to do it a lot early on in the year, but struggled to as the season went on. And then just another veteran facilitator. I think that the ceiling for Kyan Evans is quite high, and I think he has a lot of the same characteristics that made Isaiah so special, just being a guy that loves to create for others. I think he's a better scorer than what we've seen so far as well, but whether it be a veteran point guard or even like a guy that can create out of the post, you know, it doesn't, a JJ Avila type, just somebody that can score but can also facilitate and create opportunities for other guys. I just think losing Isaiah Stevens' passing is definitely going to be something we feel next year. I don't get quite as caught up in the height fetish as some of the fans. I think a guy like Nate Clifford is a perfect example of how you can really be a great team defensively and on the glass with multiple guys that are between 6'5", 6'9", hyper athletic. Yeah, it'd be nice to have like a Shaq type out there, but those cost a lot of money. We'll get into more of that in the coming days, especially as we figure out, you know, really what this team is going to look like, who's going to be around, who's going to be coaching it, all of that fun stuff. I'm going to wrap up on this podcast by just kind of talking about the Mountain West and why I personally feel that although, you know, they could have had a couple of more teams advance, this should still be considered a big step in the right direction. Real quick, though, I do want to shout out the homies at Empire Today. With Empire Today, you get the shop at home convenience, the right product for your needs, quick and professional installation, and a price match guarantee. Empire Today is the best place to get new flooring. They have copycats out there, but those copycats, they can't touch Empire, not on their quality, not on their service, not on their speed. So what they try and do is they try and advertise low quality products that Empire simply won't carry. They're not going to promise you the lowest price because anybody that does that is putting flooring in their home that they wouldn't put in their own. They want to keep the entire thing simple. That's their philosophy. They want to help you find what you need, not overwhelm you with thousands of choices and substitutes. What they leave out of their selection, it's honestly just as important as what they leave in. The virtual floor designer is a great way to see how any floor will look in a new space. It's easy. Just snap a picture and instantly see how the floors will look in your room. They pride themselves on convenience, so schedule a free in-home estimate today. All listeners can receive a $350 discount when they use the promo code DNVR. Restrictions do apply. See empiretoday.com/DNVR for details. Finally, you guys know how much I love the Circa Resort and Casino. It's Las Vegas's first ever adult-only casino resort. It's awesome. They've got a three-story stadium-style sportsbook. It's the world's largest. They've got Stadium Swim, which is open 365 days a year. You can watch 143-by-40-foot LED screen. It's freaking insane. You can sit poolside. You can sit in a cabana. You can sit in a hot tub. It's awesome. Their casino has over 1,300 slots, 48 table games with dancing dealers. They've got over 500 rooms with a variety of layouts. I've been in a couple of different ones now. All have been even better than the last. I really have never had a bad experience. Book your stay at the Circa Resort and Casino with our code DNVR20 for 20% off. The Circa Sportsbook app is also available in Colorado. Download the app at circasports.com. Circa Sports bets can be made while physically located in the state of Colorado. Must be 21 or older. All rights reserved. Circa Sports Colorado encourages you to gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-GAMBLER or visit problemgamblingcolorado.org. All right, before we get out of here, I just wanted to give a couple of thoughts on the Mountain West. They went 3-4 between the play-in games and the first round. Nevada blowing a 17-point lead against Dayton was killer. I do think that the league certainly got hurt by a couple of bad draws. I think Boise State being in a play-in game was ridiculous in the first place. And then on top of that, drawing a red-hot Colorado team who's highly athletic, has three NBA prospects, it was a bad draw. And for CSU, Virginia, not a bad draw. That team was absolutely terrible. Texas, not an awful draw either, but just the circumstance of going through so much travel, I think it greatly impacted CSU's ability to be competitive against a team that had the athletic advantage. You play that game under different circumstances, you get two more days of rest. I genuinely believe that it's a different result. New Mexico just kind of shit the bed, unfortunately. That's a common theme for them in the NCAA tournament. Them and Boise historically have been really rough in the tournament. It was a fear of mine. One, Clemson, not a great matchup for them. Also, though, just I think it is really hard to maintain the high of winning the conference championship the way that New Mexico did to play your way in. It's just hard to maintain that, especially like moving forward. It's what made what NC State has done so damn impressive in this tournament. But to me, what was really important was the league needed some validation outside of San Diego State, and Utah State winning convincingly the league champion was a great look for the league. It sucks that they're an 8 seed and now are gifted with Zach Edey and Purdue again. The league just got so screwed when it came to seedings, and the ironic thing, we love to overgeneralize and oversimplify these NCAA tournament results. Guess what? The teams with higher seeds tend to win more because it's a more favorable draw. Crazy how that works out. But they needed other teams to win outside of San Diego State. Utah State did that. Colorado State did that. First time ever that the league has had three different teams win in the tournament. That's a huge step in the right direction. Obviously, I'm a Mountain West guy. I probably get a little bit defensive about the league at times, but it's just so annoying. Like, especially when you look at some of these people, the way that they criticize the league, and I actually saw a Boise State fan point this out. They'll at the same time say that the play-in loss for Boise State counts against the league, but the play-in win for CSU doesn't. That doesn't add up. That doesn't make any fucking sense. I also think it's a little bit illogical to weight the NCAA tournament as much as we do compared to, you know, a 35 plus game sample size, but it is what it is. I mean, we do the same thing with postseason success in college football. You know, if you're the team that never wins your bowl game, everyone's like, oh, it's great. But, you know, never wins when it matters, never wins the big one. I don't know. I guess I just think it's funny that we both simultaneously can collectively appreciate the NCAA tournament because it is chaos, because you have these super fluky results where a team like Oakland gets hot and beats a team with significantly more talent on paper like Kentucky, while at the same time, we just crucify these schools that come up short in the tournament. You know, some of these teams that struggle to win in this wonky single elimination format where inherently that the weirdest of outcomes are going to happen. Like, we appreciate the chaos when we're watching it up until it bites us, and then we throw all of that out the window and become really irrational with the critiques and the hot takes and all that. And I'm not even trying to say that those people are 100% wrong or that the people that are hypercritical are 100% wrong. To an extent, if you can't win in March, you know, that's what everybody remembers. Whether that's fair or not, your legacies are dictated in March. It's why so many mediocre Syracuse teams are beloved, because they went on and won in March. It's why Tom Izzo gets to coast in the Big Ten every year, and then they win 2-3 games in the tournament and he's Mr. March. I get all of it. It's why if you put a knife to my back and said, pick one, you either get a couple of NCAA tournament wins or you get CSU's first ever conference, regular season conference championship, I would have taken the tournament wins in a heartbeat. I think winning the regular season is probably harder to do. It's more indicative of who you were that year, a more accurate representation of what you are. But March is when legacies are defined. March is really all that matters in the end. And so I can throw a million different rationalizations at you. I can throw all the logic out in the world. And at the same time, you know, I get that some people, it's really just going to come down to, well, did you show up when it really counts or not? And the problem for the Mountain West, even though there have been a lot of factors that have worked against them, you know, bad draws, bad seedings, all of that type of stuff, the league has just come up short continually. And that has really impacted, you know, the way that they have been perceived on a national level. Getting three teams to win a game, it's a huge step in the right direction. It's something you need to follow up with, you know, next year. Next year we need, you know, 2-3-4 teams. It's just, you know, kind of a lot like what I said with building a program. You need to build it up for the league. Just keep getting back, find ways to go further and further. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're not getting plagued with the same type of critiques. There's always going to be hot takes out there. There are people that try and claim Gonzaga is fraudulent because they don't win the national championship. They've been to 9 straight Sweet 16s. I would trade my left foot for that. It sucks the way the Rams went out against Texas. You really would have loved to have seen them. Even if you lose, but you just don't have the historically poor offensive performance in the first half, you probably feel a lot better about that one. It sucks that Nevada choked in a major way against a Dayton team who I didn't really think was that good. But the important thing was the league didn't come out and just step on the rake and get smacked in the face again. You've still got an opportunity to make some noise. San Diego, I mean, you don't want to ever underestimate an Ivy League team, and it feels like one of them gets hot every year now. But that Yale matchup is pretty favorable for San Diego State to make the second weekend of the tournament. Purdue's going to be really a hard draw for Utah State, but I don't I don't hate their chances of at least making it interesting. I mean, we know Purdue struggles in the tournament historically, not to mention that I think Danny Sprinkle's a really good coach. I think they'll throw a lot of different zone looks. They love to go to that 1-3-1 that kind of morphs into like a 2-3 depending on the situation. They'll switch a lot. They'll certainly do everything they can to take them off their rhythm. The hardest part is just matching with the length of a team like Purdue. But you never know. That's all I'm saying. Yes, we want to strive for higher. Yes, we want to see the league get to a point where it's viewed on par, you know, every year with conferences like the Big East. This year was a step in the right direction. So that's my two cents on it all. I appreciate everybody that tuned in. I'll have more written content coming. I'm going to write some features and stuff based on some of the content I was able to get while on the road. I know the schedule has been wonky podcast-wise. It's been just, I mean, I'm literally was up 40 straight hours at one point. I went from Vegas to Denver to Columbus to Dayton to New Jersey to Charlotte to Nashville to Denver, all in, you know, like a 6-day span. It's just been absolutely insane. I wouldn't trade it for the world, though, and I sure as hell appreciate everybody for following along. No matter what happens this offseason, we'll have tons of content coming your way. I'm looking forward to getting up to Fort Collins for spring football. So, you know, we'll kind of have some of that starting to get mixed in as well. And then we'll have some fun in the offseason. I'm looking forward to getting some unique guests on here. If you have anybody with a CSU tie that you would find interesting on this podcast that you just want me to pick their brain, send a recommendation. Doesn't even necessarily have to do anything with sports. You know, I'd love to highlight all of the cool stuff happening at CSU and in the offseason, especially kind of have a little bit more flexibility there. Yeah, that's all I've got in this one. Much love, y'all. Always proud to be. Peace.
Peaches out of Palisades, sweet as mama's marmalade. This shit sound like summer days, the windows down on harmony. The family band sing harmonies, my daddy played the drums. My mama slapped that bass, my sister sang these songs. Dancing under canopies, we thank the trees for all their leaves. We are just some drops of water, together make up seven seas. And one day I'll be like my father, one day I will learn to breathe. I'm choking on the thought that I am not the man I wanna be. I got blood on my shirt, like I wear my heart on my sleeve. She said I look good in red, but that went straight to my head. So now she's rocking my tees, tucked into new Prada jeans. And we ain't spoke in a month, but I just saw her last week. The lipstick stain still on my cheek, like we ain't talk enough. And we always seem to laugh, but never nod at us. So the future's looking grim, it's kinda ominous. And this song ain't about love, that'd be too obvious. See, this is more about lust and all of my misconceptions. And this is more about me and all of my self-deception. I'll tell myself a lie 100 times, don't need corrections. But every night I pray to God, I hope I learn my lesson. And the peaches out from Palisade, and they sweet as mama's marmalade. And this should sound like summer days, the windows down on harmony. The family band sing harmonies, my daddy played the drums. And my mama slapped that bass, and my sister sang these songs. Dancing hand in hand, we were tripping two left feet. Like a middle school slow dance, no one knew how to lead. But I'm still thankful for these days, they put a smile.